Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of February 20th, 2021. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinker. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well, and I'm looking forward to doing some time traveling. We're going to get in our time machine, and we're going to zoom forward and get a little discussion of the after-COVID world, and then zoom backwards to the last time that the atmosphere had 410 parts per million of carbon dioxide in it. So join the fun.
So Mariah, there was a study that came out this past week, which has all of the right pedigree, people from Harvard, from University College London, I think. I mean, people are very thoughtful about this kind of research. And they did a study basically that asked, what did people die from all around the world? And it turns out, surprisingly enough, that 20% of the deaths in any given year, one in five people, their deaths can be attributable to fossil fuel pollution. Sort of the stuff, not carbon dioxide, but the little particles and soot and junk that comes out of from burning fossil fuels.
Yeah,
that is an amazing number when you think of it on the global scale. One in five persons on the planet each year, right? Did you see anything about that?
Yeah. The particulate matters from burning fossil fuels. I mean, the soot, right, and the black carbon, all that stuff is really gross and terrible for your lungs. So even if it doesn't kill you, it can lead to a lot of serious lung problems, and it of course it has disproportional effect on the neighborhoods that live near these fossil fuel plants.
Well, the thing I saw was talking about the 2.5 micron particles, right? So they in order to do the research, these guys classify the size of the soot particles, right? So the stuff that comes out of your tailpipe, they can measure the size of the, and the tiny ones that are 2.5 microns in diameter, basically, roughly, right? A human hair is 50 microns, just for scale. You pluck a hair out of your head and look at it, that's 50 microns wide, right? These particles are 2.5 microns wide. And evidently what they're able to do is to use satellite data. So now they're mapping the globe. They look for however, I don't exactly understand how they do it, but they can tell where what the densities of the 2.5 micron particles are with much more selectivity than they could in the past. And when they overlay that with the deaths and where things are happening, they're able to make this attribution that says most people, you know, there's one in five people die from the pollution. And of course, you're right. The number of people who die from this stuff is like skyrocketing in China, because the pollution levels there are so terrible. India is pretty terrible. And if you go into South America, it's much, much less, because they don't burn as much fossil fuels, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just, I mean, it's a remarkable thing, especially in the age of COVID, when we are highly conscious of the death rate, right? That's kind of the number that we bandy about each day, right? How many people died from COVID today, up and down, and we're glad when it goes down, of course. But you start to think, my God, one in five people around the world die from this other thing. So, I mean, how do you scale that kind of pandemic, the fossil fuel pandemic deaths, with the COVID deaths, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, I think we've grown sort of, I mean, numb is not the right word, but just logically, you think like, okay, we've got these cars that are burning all this nasty stuff that we're breathing in. Well, I don't want to be around that. But we've sort of been conditioned by the fossil fuel, you know, industry No, no, no. But we have to have burn fuels to make society run. This is the only way to do it. It's efficient. It's, you know, it means progress. And so you sort of say, well, okay, I guess it's all right if I'm breathing in all this dirty stuff because this is how it has to be.
Right.
And which, of course, is not the case. But you become numb to it. You say, well, this is the only option we have.
I agree. I mean, it's sort of like this Faustian bargain you've made with the fossil fuel companies. Yeah, okay, right. I mean, if I get to drive my car, then I'll take my chances. Maybe I will. Right. Maybe I'll be one of the other four. And that, but still, I mean, you begin to think that with all of the justified concern over COVID, that there's another source of death that's entirely within our purview to fix, right? Right. We could do, you know, you could. Now, of course, everyone's going to die of something, but this article said that the average life would be a year longer for like most of the globe if people weren't dying of this stuff. Right?
Yeah.
And it just, it argues for the sort of moral imperative to address the fossil fuel pandemic with the same sort of intensity that we are concerned about these biological COVID kind of pandemics, because the COVID pandemic is much more scary, right? You see it in a movie, right? Kind of, you have this horrifying concept, whereas the fossil fuel is, yeah, that's the devil you're familiar with, right?
Right.
So, I don't know. I mean, I think that, I guess the whole question of something as scope of 1 in 5 deaths globally being due to something that's solvable, like fossil fuel pollution, and the fact that we can't quite snap ourselves out of the trance to address that brings us to the next kind of topic that we have, or the next link in this sort of chain of things. There's an article in The Guardian, which of course is a newspaper in England, does an excellent job of covering environmental stuff, global stuff, American politics, a lot of good stuff. But there was this opinion piece news report about that we are in a very dangerous time, right? And I think the case, Mariah, correct me if you think I got it wrong, but they're making the case that with the teeter-totter of American democracy on the edge of authoritarianism, with Brexit coming along, with things like populism around the world, authoritarian populism around the world, with issues like Black Lives Matter, the Me Too movement, all of these things building on top of the idea that capitalism is on its, you know, you can make the case that capitalism has so outstretched its capabilities, the inequalities are so big that something's not working there. On top of that, you have a COVID crisis that I think most people would look at each other and say, this is not the last COVID pandemic, right? This is just the beginning of these kind of diseases that jump from animals to humans. And you pile all that up on top of climate change as the thing that's taking the whole world to heck in a handbasket. And you say, boy, are we at the cusp of some new definition of civilization? Right? That's a huge question, of course, maybe pretentious, but not. I'm not sure that. So did I overstate it, Mariah?
I mean, the way the article opens is it says, you know, something to the effect of that we're going to look back at this and it'll be written before COVID and after COVID. Right. You know, the idea being that this is, unfortunately, this could very much be just the beginning of a whole series of epidemics caused by humanity crashing into ecosystems that we used not to be part of. In other words, as we sort of overstep our boundary, I don't know, maybe overstep our boundary is not the right word, but as we encroach onto more and more habitats and more interface more often with different biological creatures that the zoonotic pandemics are just going to become more and more of an interface and more of a problem for us.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a very different world that we may see in 100 years in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked with sort of this small time discussion about, is everyone going to go back to the office after COVID? given Zoom, I don't think we're all going to be driving back into downtown offices, right? And the idea that, I mean, there was some other thing I saw that said the impact of COVID, which is this, you know, little tiny bug, and maybe it's gotten some small fraction of the human race, right? You know, out of billions of people, it's not billions of people that have it. It has disrupted everything, and how fragile all of our operations are. It really does. I guess the reason you say it is because I think that certainly to address the climate issue, you need to think big, right? The future is not going to be some kind of linear extrapolation of where we are now, right? It's going to be some new formulation. And there are so many things pushing us in so many directions that we just need to stay in equilibrium, keep an eye on what things might be popping up that we need to accept, and that we shouldn't be fighting necessarily to hold on to all the old things. I think that that article in the Guardian, one of the other interesting points they make is that the Roman Empire rose and fell. And there are articles about how the Roman Empire was affected by various kinds of pandemic diseases. The Chinese Empire rose and fell, right? But none of them have done as much damage to the planet as the current epic. And why is that? The current epic was basically triggered by Christopher Columbus and Vasco da Gama sailing away from Europe, right, and conquering, all these, carrying Western technology to the rest of the world. And the argument is that we are now entering this sort of post-imperial age when all that stuff has been done, the whole world has been captured by it. And okay, where are we now, right? How do we build a sustainable world that goes, I don't know. It's one of those big, big questions that.
Yeah.
There was
hard to get your head around.
There was the song before you were born, Mariah, that talked about questions run too deep for such a simple man. Right. And I'll have to dig that up and play it back as the. But I mean, so the whole question of where we are, where is humanity going to be in 100 years? And what's it? Are we going to look back at these times and smile quaintly and say, look at those idiots? You know, look, now we do things right. Right? 100 years from now is yet another article that I highly recommend you try to read. It's very entertaining and it's well written. So that's what made me happy about it. But it's an article in the Atlantic Monthly. And the conceit of the article is that the author basically takes you back in time to previous epics. We're talking about geological epics, thousands of years, millions of years back in time, to periods when the carbon dioxide levels were similar to less than, worse than where we are right now. So keep in mind that right now we're at 410 parts per million. At the time that George Washington was stomping around 200 years ago, we were at 280 parts per million. So we've gone from 280 parts per million up to 410 today. The last time carbon dioxide concentrations were 410 parts per million was 410 parts per million was in fact 3 million years ago. So what the guy talks through, and it's quite as I say interestingly written, he says, okay, what was the Earth like 3 million years ago? And it was a thoroughly different place. And the argument is that 3 million years ago, the carbon dioxide concentration in the atmosphere had been approached slowly. And so the sea levels rose, and all the animals over the course of 10,000, 20,000, 100,000 years figured out how to accommodate the rising sea levels. And there were, you know, pine trees at the North Pole and blah, 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 blah. What's different now, so that 3 million years ago, the Earth was in equilibrium. Right now, what we've done is to raise the carbon dioxide level so high. But it's not an equal. The sea levels haven't risen yet, right? But in 10,000 years, they're going to have. They're certainly going to be there, right? And he goes, and then he jumps, and he says, "Okay, 3 million years ago was when it was 400 parts per million. There's a fair likelihood if humans don't do anything, we will get up to 1,000 or 1,200 parts per million by the beginning of the next century, right? 1,000 ppm. And says, okay, for that, you have to go back, I think it's 16 million years to the time when the North Pole was a tropical rainforest, right? A steamy swamp. And he's saying, can you imagine this thing where the crickets are going all through the Arctic night, right? Where it gets dark for 6 months, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a rainforest. And what's up with that? And it's just, it's sort of the implication being, if is that the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere has the potential to wreak enormous changes on the planet, just the weather of the planet, and that we're just marching along glibly doing it, putting out carbon dioxide, and the consequences will be felt much, much later. It's an interesting read. There's too much in the book to in the article to describe in detail. But I recommend if you get a chance, you should read it. Yeah, I see the notes here say it's 44 to 56 minutes of reading if you're depending how fast you read. So
yeah. One of my favorite lines is they're quoting the late Columbia climate scientist Wally Brooker, but they say the climate system is an angry beast and we are poking it with sticks.
Exactly.
Good writing like that.
So there you go. There's your heavy duty thoughts for today. Please write a 300-word essay and mail it in to the Climate Minute with your answer as to where we're going to be in 100 years. All right, Mariah.
I have to add this just because she's one of my favorite authors. But Naomi Oreskes and Eric Conway wrote a book called The Collapse of Western Civilization, which is a view from the future. It was written in the year 2393, looking back. So if you like this kind of looking back and looking forward, I recommend that book.
Do you remember enough of it to be what?
Oh,
what,
I do. Yeah, yeah.
What did they say? I mean, what was the?
Well, I don't want to give any spoiler alerts, but I think the end, it does end well, at least. After that's chaos.
All right. Well, I'll put up a link to that book as well, because we keep saying processing this kind of thinking. There's a level at which it's artistic, right? I mean, you're not logically going, with some sort of intellectual exercise, process the idea that the whole planet could be having alligators in the Bering Strait again, right? So it's somehow artistic, and that's where these things come in.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll put up links to all this crazy stuff on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. As I say, if you have questions, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what you think. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or any of the podcast distribution apps. Please have your friends rank us and listen to us on their cell phones. I want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Mariah, thank you for thinking about this crazy stuff with me.
Oh, always fun.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.